Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Craig Matthews, and he'll be answering your most important questions on fly fishing the Yellowstone River. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you would like to ask Craig a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address on the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Craig Matthews about fly fishing the Yellowstone River. The Platte River Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming, features a first-class website covering all aspects of fly fishing the tailwaters of the North Platte River, including up-to-date local fishing reports, fly patterns, guide services, and online shopping for top-of-the-line gear for any travel destination. The Platte River Fly Shop provides a professional guide staff for the Blue Ribbon, Trophy, Gray Reef, and Miracle Mile sections of the North Platte River. Visit their extensive website at www.wyotrout.com. That's wyotrout.com. Or call the Platte River Fly Shop at 1-307-237-5997. That's 1-307-237-5997. Well, before we introduce Craig, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. On our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for that link under Craig's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Craig's book, The Yellowstone Fly Fishing Guide, courtesy of the Lions Press. If you want to know more about what Lions Press has to offer in the way of books, go to www.lionspress.com, www.lionspress.com. Now, here's how you can win that book. You have to be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show, and the question will be something that Craig and I talk about during the show. You got to submit your answer along with your name and your location in the text box on our homepage. So listen closely, use your best typing skills, and maybe you'll win Craig's book. Tonight our guest is Craig Matthews. Craig Matthews came to West Yellowstone, Montana in 1979 and became the town's police chief. His wife Jackie, a police dispatcher. In 1980, they founded Blue Ribbon Flies, employing the handicapped fly tires and tying flies wholesale for major retail outlets. In 1982, Craig retired from the police work, and Blue Ribbon Flies opened up their full-line retail store. Since opening their shop, Craig has authored dozens of articles for major fly fishing publications on Yellowstone fly fishing, fishing bonefish and permit, fly patterns, and more. He has authored and co-authored six important books on fly fishing, including Fly Patterns of Yellowstone, Fishing Yellowstone Hatches, The Yellowstone Fly Fishing Guide, Western Fly Fishing Strategies, Fly Fishing the Madison, and Volume 2 of Fly Patterns of the Yellowstone in 2008. Craig also produced Telly Award-winning DVDs like Fishing Yellowstone Hatches, Tying Yellowstone Fly Patterns, Bone Fishing the Flats, and Fly Fishing the Madison. He's also developed several famous fly patterns like the Sparkle Dun, X and Iris Caddis, Nature Stone Nymphs, Pop's Bonefish Bitters, TDF Shrimp, Turnip Crab, and many others. Craig and Jackie and their Blue Ribbon Flies have been awarded many conservation and environmental awards. In 1997, they were presented with the most prestigious award given by the National Parks, the Protector of Yellowstone National Park Award. This seldom given honor was presented by Yellowstone National Park in recognition of their work to preserve and protect Yellowstone for all future generations. Craig, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Roger, it's really great to be back. It's been a few months, and I'm really glad to be back and part of your show.
Well, thanks for lending us your time again. We did have a lot of people after your first show saying, hey, let's get a little bit more specific about some of these fisheries in Yellowstone, because we talked kind of generally last time.
We did.
So we're going to give it to them tonight.
Good deal.
Okay, well, let's get started. We're going to talk about the Yellowstone tonight and the Yellowstone River specifically, and specifically really the top three sections. So first of all, Craig, tell us about the Yellowstone, and, you know, we do have an international audience, so tell people where it is in the world, first of all, and then let's talk about its headwaters, where it starts out.
You know, Yellowstone, of course, is really the world's premier, still is the world's premier cutthroat fishery. It's the longest undammed river in the United States. It's noted for its prolific insect hatches, and it's one of the greatest places to fish in Yellowstone Park. It's still a very popular river in Yellowstone, and there are a couple of factors that we'll talk about later that have impacted the Yellowstone over the last few years. But the Yellowstone begins its long journey to the Missouri really as two small branches, if you will, two small tributaries that form in Wyoming Shoshone Mountain Range. And they flow north from the 12,000-foot Yount Peak in Yellowstone Park, and it crosses the south boundary of the Yellowstone where it enters the park's thoroughfare region. And that's the headwaters of the Yellowstone River. It flows for about 14 miles and then it enters Yellowstone Lake, which is in, of course, Yellowstone Park.
Now, the area we're going to talk about first, well, I'd like you to describe the three sections that we're going to talk about tonight.
Okay, and that really is the first section, Roger, we're going to talk about. That's called the thoroughfare region of Yellowstone. It's, you know, it meanders in that area through probably the wildest and most primitive country in the lower 48 states. Once it leaves Yellowstone Lake, it tumbles in a big rough and tumble canyon river, canyon stretches. It goes through two major canyons, the Black Canyon and the Yellowstone being the lowermost section before the town of Gardner, and the upper, of course, is the Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone. Once it reaches the town of Gardner, Montana, it leaves Yellowstone Park and flows for about 60 miles north to the town of Livingston, Montana, through what is more popularly known as the Paradise Valley in the state of Montana. It's a lovely river there, too, but it really changes character, becomes a little bit slower, has one little canyon stretch called the Yankee Jim Canyon, and it meanders throughout some beautiful ranch land for 60 miles until it hits the town of Livingston.
So we did have just a request from Yashiro in Japan, and he says every time he goes to the Yellowstone, he fishes the upper section. You know, how about talking about the lower? So we will talk about the lower section, and nice to see somebody from Japan listening in on our show. So we always appreciate our international listeners. So we're going to break this down later and talk about each of these sections, but I just wanted to kind of give folks a general idea. And, of course, Craig, I'm sure you're going to tailor your answers, because some of these are broad questions that the people sent in, but you may have to tailor it for a particular section, because the character does change quite a bit on that in these different sections, right?
Oh, you bet it does.
Yeah. Okay, you talked about cutthroat. Are there other species that one will target as sport fish in the Yellowstone?
There sure are, Roger. You know, that upper stretch is primarily still a cutthroat fishery. Once it leaves Yellowstone Lake into the falls, it's still a cutthroat fishery. When you get below the falls, in that middle stretch of river, if you will, still in Yellowstone Park, from the Grand Canyon to the Yellowstone through the Black Canyon and to the town of Gardner, it picks up additional species. And from there, you're liable to catch brown trout. You're liable to catch rainbow trout. There's even a few brook trout. Of course, there's a lot of mountain whitefish. And I don't recall if I mentioned rainbow trout. So you have, you know, brook, brown, cutthroat, mountain whitefish, as well as rainbow trout in that middle section, as well as the section outside of the park, down to the town of Livingston, Montana.
Okay. Okay. And we did have a question about those whitefish, Eugene in Immigrant, Montana. It says, why are there so many whitefish in Yellowstone? I can't seem to avoid them.
Well, you know, that's the good news. And fisheries biologists will tell you that you measure the health of a river fishery in Montana by the amount of whitefish. If there's a lot of whitefish, that tells our biologists that we have a very healthy fishery. And, of course, whitefish are cousins to the trout. They're in the trout family. They're a very valuable species. A lot of people don't target whitefish. And to avoid whitefish, When you're nymphing, of course, it's tough to do because whitefish will take primarily any bright-colored nymph that you throw. They'll take anything from stonefly nymphs to egg patterns. If they're feeding on dry flies, then you don't want to spray your cast every rising fish. You want to really study the rise form. Whitefish generally make a little splash at the end of the rise form. I look for head and tail risers that are readily identifiable in terms of being a cutthroat or a rainbow or a brown trout. So you really have to search and target the rising fish and make sure you're fishing to trout when they're rising to an insect hatch.
When you're nymphing, do the whitefish hold in the same areas? I mean, if you were to get on a whitefish in a particular run, should you move?
No.
Okay.
Whitefish are going to be found in the Yellowstone right with the trout.
Okay.
In that lower stretch, there are so many whitefish. And, again, that's a good sign, but by the same token, a lot of guys don't want to catch whitefish. And your choice of nymph, you want to go to, if you fish smaller nymphs, generally you're going to catch a lot of whitefish. If you fish bright-colored nymphs, like a Ryacophila, bright green caddis larva, that's a capital whitefish killer, as is a prince nymph. You want to primarily imitate what the trout are feeding on. And you'll, you know, for instance, if they're on betta submergers and betta nymphs, you're probably going to do a whole lot better by imitating that nymph rather than putting on a general attractor nymph like a prince nymph.
Okay, okay. Well, and they're not all that bad, the whitefish. They give you pretty good.
Well, I get a kick out of them. Yeah, and, you know, I really enjoy catching them, but I do realize that a lot of guys have a hard time handling them. Even with a barbless hook, they tend to shake their heads, and they'll break fine tippets, which is kind of frustrating if you're fishing during failing light during a caddis emergence.
Yeah.
But again, they are a trout. They are a native species, and they're a trophy fish. We have a lot of people that come here that strictly target whitefish. That's what they want to catch.
Oh, interesting, interesting. A whole new twist, just like the popularity of the carp coming on in the past.
Exactly.
10 years, you know?
Yep, same deal.
Okay, we got Rodney in Apple Valley, California, and he wants to know about the fate of the Yellowstone cutthroat. Have they, evidently, they had some problems in the past. What's their status right now?
Well, you know, you look at cutthroat populations, primarily in Yellowstone Park. The good news out of the park is that cutthroats seem to be rebounding with slot limits and better regulation. In the park, of course, above the lake we have, and when we talk of Yellowstone Lake and we talk of the river directly above the lake as well as the river directly below the lake, most of those fish are lake fish that migrate into the rivers. So those are lake fish that may spawn in the river and then go back up to the lake. They kind of come and go in the lake. And what we're seeing there is with the introduction of lake trout in Yellowstone Lake as well as with whirling disease, that's affected some of the tributaries like Pelican Creek as well as parts of Yellowstone Lake. And now biologists are telling us that drought may be the largest culprit. You know, we've had such tremendous drought years during the last 20, 25 seasons where the cutthroat, which is a spring and early summer spawner, will go up and spawn successfully, migrate back out to the lake. The fry emerge. They live in the summer and early fall, and when they go to escape back from these tributary streams, the streams literally fan out and don't make it back to whether it be Yellowstone Lake or to the Yellowstone River. And consequently, they can perish over winter in these small tributaries. So we're seeing, you know, kind of a three-edged sword take a nick on the cutthroat. The good news is, and I know part of Rodney's question is, what can we do as fly fishermen to help preserve this magnificent fish? We should all join organizations like the Yellowstone Park Foundation and specify your donations to go to the Fisheries Fund, which can greatly help in the struggle to save the Yellowstone cutthroat. Now more than ever, we need every penny to go to that Fisheries Fund and simply go to ypf.org and make a donation and become a member of the Yellowstone Park Foundation and make a donation to the Fisheries Fund. We should also become members of Trout Unlimited and specifically their whirling disease program. These are very important organizations and programs that really can greatly assist in the comeback of the Yellowstone cutthroat. And those are just small things that we can do as fly fishermen and businesses. And I wave the flag for 1% for the planet. And I know a lot of you are familiar with that, businesses that tax themselves 1% of our gross sale. And our money goes directly to work in Yellowstone through the Park Foundation, through the Fisheries Fund. So it's important to support 1% members and specify where you'd like your donation through them to go.
Great, great. Well, sounds like some good programs to be involved with there. Now, the lake trout in Yellowstone, are they diminishing or are they just hanging in there still? Or I know there's been a big effort to get rid of them, basically.
Yes, and of course, Congress has permanently funded an eradication program, which was, again, a direct result of the Yellowstone Park Foundation and the Greater Yellowstone Coalition lobbying for that. And, of course, monies that are realized through the sale of Yellowstone fishing permits go to that eradication program, too. And we're holding our own. They have greatly reduced the spawning population, those larger lake trout that can be responsible eating 50 to 60 huge cutthroat, spawning age cutthroat a year, and really taking its toll on the Yellowstone cutthroat population. The good news is that we've really seen that population dip. Lake trout have to be, I believe, 3 or 4 years old to become sexually mature and spawn, and consequently those fish have been greatly diminished in number. So we're dealing with smaller lake trout now, and they have an ongoing 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week gill netting program out in Yellowstone Lake with the SS Freedom. That's the name of the fisheries boat that's out there gill netting. A lot of volunteer labor through the Yellowstone Volunteer Fly Fishers program, helping them with the gill nets and surveys. We're really seeing a great program in the results.
So that's a pretty aggressive.
They have been aggressive, yes.
You know, to get out there and net them on that kind of ongoing basis. So that's good.
You bet.
Okay. Chuck in Santa Rosa, California, said he's been coming to your fly shop since the 1970s, and it's the best shop anywhere. So there's a little Benny to you there. And
I got to put Chuck on that payroll.
Yeah. But his question is, what areas of Yellowstone would you recommend for the wading angler during spring and summer? Again, talking about specifically the Yellowstone River.
You know, if you want, and I know a lot of people like to fish in Yellowstone Park itself, and certainly there's some very good fishing to be done in Yellowstone Park on the Yellowstone River, but in the spring, of course, the river doesn't open until either the general opener or above the falls. It doesn't open until July 15th. So I like to fish early in the season, pre-runoff. I like to fish the Yellowstone around Livingston, the town of Livingston, upstream of Livingston. You get the Mother's Day caddis hatch, which is a tremendous emergence, which happens around the time of the holiday named, of course, Mother's Day. In April and May, end of April and first part of May, gets very good squalla hatch. Also gets some March browns, early spring mayfly, and early spring betas at that same time. There's a lot of access, whether it be Mallard's Rest, about 14 miles above the town of Livingston, all the way up to Gardner. You get tremendous early spring pre-runoff hatches. The river is very uncrowded at that time. Not that it ever gets crowded, but you'll generally be alone in most of the popular areas, and you can experience very good dry fly fishing. In the summertime, you know, you'll have a lot of float traffic, but very little wading is done. A lot of boats floating down the river, and you can pick and choose all the way, again, from Gardner all the way down to the town of Livingston. Also, there's very good wading in the Black Canyon stretches. It does require an hour, maybe a four-mile hike, sometimes as little as a mile and a half, depending on what access site you so choose. But there's a lot of water that's available to the wading angler, whether you want to dry fly fish or nymph fish in spring and summer, as well as fall.
Now, when you hit Gardner, you're in Montana, so you need a different fishing license.
That's correct, yep.
And there's different, of course, we go from totally public to private water up there. What's the access like between Gardner and Livingston for somebody wading?
Well, at any bridge site, of course, in Montana, the beauty of Montana and, you know, our current governor's really been responsible for purchasing a lot of access points along the river. But if you look at the map along all our state rivers, but you look at the map from Gardner to the town of Livingston, and I just casually looking at the access sites, there's got to be 15 or 20 access sites all along that stretch where not only state access but bridge access points. There's a lot of pullouts, as well as there's private property that is actually open to the public, little two tracks that you can drive in. You're welcome to fish just as long as you take your litter with you. So with that said, there's so much access on the Yellowstone system that you will not have a problem whatsoever.
That's good to know. That's really good to know. You know, in this day and age, that becomes an issue, and it's different
sure
in every
does,
state,
does.
You know, so you have to kind of watch what's going on. Okay, time to take a quick break, and after we take a break, we'll come back and talk with Craig Matthews more about fly fishing the Yellowstone River. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department, and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. visit their extensive website at www.kiene.com. It's www.kiene.com. Or call them at 1-800-400-0359. That's 1-800-400-0359. Were you listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio? We're talking with Craig Matthews about fly fishing the Yellowstone River. If you'd like to ask Craig a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Craig, before we dive back into the questions about the Yellowstone, tell us a bit about what's going on in your fly fishing world, about blue ribbon flies in your business, and anything else that you think that everybody would like to know.
Well, we're really excited, Roger. We're launching a new website. You know, our award-winning website has been several years now, and we're going to launch a new one next month. We've been working hard on it. We've been working hard on some film projects. I'm appearing in a pilot series with my good friend Yvon Chouinard of Patagonia on a program called The American Fly Guide. We've just filmed the pilot with Wing Media Productions, Tom Pouton and Carlton Wing. We're excited about that. That'll be launched early part of next year in 2011. And I'm working on a couple other projects, one with Confluence Film on Yellowstone, which will be out in early 2012, and another one on Spring Creeks. We'll be working on Odell Creek, a section of Odell, and we're going to be talking about Spring Creeks. I'm also working on another writing project called A Stream, which is a series of several authors, myself, McGuane, Tom Brokaw, Verlin Klinkenberg, among others, are putting together a book called A Stream, which will be published by Nick Lyon's son, Tony, Skyhorse Press, sometime in early 2012. So we're excited about that, too.
Wow. You're not busy, are you?
Well, we thought about retiring several times, but I just haven't had time to retire.
This doesn't happen, huh, does it? Well, we surely appreciate all your contributions, that's for sure.
Well, it's been a lot of fun. Yeah. We continue our work with the Yellowstone Park Foundation as well as the Greater Yellowstone Coalition and the Madison River Foundation, which is a fledgling organization which is making huge strides in protecting and preserving and enhancing the Madison drainage. So we're excited. I'm also doing a program with the Henry's Fork Foundation coming up in Salt Lake next March. So we're excited. It's going to be a busy winter.
Good, good. Glad to hear it. Well, we've got a follow-up question here. Oh, did you give your website address? I don't recall if you did or not.
If you go to www.blueribbonflies.com, you can see our website. You'll gain access to our website. I encourage you to sign up for our free weekly email newsletter full of all kinds of information, fly tying tips, photographs. And then we also do a blog, and you can just follow the link on blueribbonflies.com to get to that.
Great, great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got a kind of a follow-up question from Rod in Pomona, California. He's asked about the most common species of trout, which you've already talked about. But he also asks about the average size of trout on the river.
And that's going to vary by section. In the upper part of the river, certainly above the lake, the average size is 17 inches. The average size of the trout from the Yellowstone Lake downstream to the brink of the falls, which is about a 14-mile stretch, those fish are huge now. Those are lake fish. They're far fewer in number because of the impact of whirling disease in lake trout. But we're seeing those fish average over 20 inches now. And the fish in the falls section from, you know, in that middle section, the Black Canyon stretch, they average about 14 inches. And then downstream of the town of Gardner, Montana, all the way to Livingston, those fish are probably going to average between 15 and 15 and a half inches.
Wow, pretty big all the way along, aren't they?
Yep, beautiful fish.
Yeah, yeah. Is there, and I should have asked you this before, but we have Dean in Westford, Massachusetts, asking about if there's, do we have an online map of the area that we're talking about? Do you know right off the top of your head?
Well, yeah, I'm sure there is somewhere, but I'm not aware of how to get to it.
Okay, no problem. Sorry about that, Dean. I should have taken care of that ahead of time. But okay, let's dive back into these questions. And Chris, Farmington, Utah, asks, what areas would you recommend for a first visit to the Yellowstone? Which section?
Well, the upper section, and I really want to make this clear, Roger, the upper section, the thoroughfare section, should you decide to fish that, that is not a section you go to fish. That is a section you go to for its scenic quality, for its remoteness, its wildlife. And again, the population of cutthroat has been diminished in that section because of the influence of drought, boiling disease, and lake trout. I would fish either, and you should on your first visit, fish directly below the lake. You know, it's closed for the first mile and a half, and then you hit the open water from there to the brink of the falls. I would spend a day fishing that. You're going to do a lot of walking and stalking and searching fish, a lot like New Zealand. You'll find pods of fish, and you'll fish to rising fish. I'd recommend that, and I'd also recommend that you make a hike into the Black Canyon, whether it be on the Hell Roaring Creek Trail or on the Rescue Creek Trail above the town of Gardner. Those are very good places to fish some rough-and-tumble canyon water. You're not going to wait it. You're just going to fish from the bank. You can fish big, bushy flies. The fish are pretty naive. You're going to catch a lot of really nice wild cutthroat trout. The second time you're here, you may want to look at the stretch below the town of Gardner all the way down to Livingston.
Okay. Okay. Lloyd in Meadville, Pennsylvania asks, what's the biggest distinction between fishing a western river like the Yellowstone and eastern trout streams?
Well, you know, if you look at an eastern stream like the Delaware, you could probably compare parts of the Yellowstone to a large river like that. The Yellowstone is one big river, but it has varied water from meadow stretches, a lot of rough and tumble, nasty canyon water, a lot of water, for instance, the Yankee Jim Canyon between Gardner and Livingston, that, boy, most people wouldn't even want to float that. It's very dangerous water to float. So we have, you know, again, big water, sometimes up to 30,000 CFS in places. And that's a huge river with a lot of force, and it's a mean river at times. Once the water drops after about July 4th, it becomes a whole lot more placid and a lot more fishable, a lot more wadeable as well as floatable. But the distinction being there's a lot of really big rough and tumble, noisy water in comparison to most eastern trout streams.
And kind of a follow-up to that, we have Stephen Paula in Lake Placid, New York, asking, a lot of first-time visitors, you know, the imposing size of the Yellowstone is pretty intimidating. What advice would you have to small stream, you know, eastern anglers that are trying to make a transition to big water? Are there specific tips you would give them?
First thing I say is, you know, you get to the river, don't even put your waders on. Sit on the bank and watch. Quite often, and even those rough and tumble stretches where you shouldn't really wade anyway, but get on the river, sit down on a rock, and just watch. Quite often you'll see nice fish rising to midges or caddis or whatever the hatch may be in fairly shallow water, maybe knee-deep in quiet water where they come out of the heavy water to feed. I like to dissect a stream. You know, you look upstream and you look at that big roar of water, and the same thing on my home river, the Madison. A lot of people are very intimidated by it, but I tell them, fish the edges. Don't even wade to your knees. Most of the time, don't even wade. Just hunt and pick along the banks, and you'll be very surprised and very happy with the outcome. Patience and do what the river tells you to do. Watch what's going on. Watch the flows. Look for these little subtle rises and have at it, and you'll do very well if you do.
So kind of, if I'm hearing you correctly, maybe break that river down into what would be a smaller river that you can manage visually.
Exactly, exactly.
Not think about the expanse of the thing all the way across, because you're not having to fish that anyway. So
sure, you can't get out there anyway, so don't even concern yourself with what's going on out in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. And this is kind of, I think you've kind of answered this, but I wanted to just put it out there for Jay from the Netherlands. He listens to our shows a lot, and again, an international listener. He says his first trip to the Yellowstone was in 1992. He said fishing was great. Since then, I've been there about four times. Every time I was there, the fishing was a little worse than the previous time. What's causing this? And then he says, P.S., I still have the sage rod I bought at your store.
Well, thanks, Jay.
Yeah, I guess he hasn't broken it yet.
And I'm Dutch, too. You know, and again, that's really when whirling disease reared its ugly head, as well as the drought really took effect, was in those early 90s. And it continues to do so. We've had a couple of really good water years. And I agree with that assessment, Jay, that, you know, the fishing has gotten tougher and tougher. The good news, I think, is the last couple of years, it seems to be rebounding. The biologists have got hope. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, things were pretty doom and gloom for the Yellowstone. And I'm talking about specifically the park stretch. Here the last couple of years, people are a little bit more upbeat. We're seeing smaller fish. We're seeing some recruitment. So hang in there. You know, the Yellowstone cut is a late bloomer, and it takes a few years for it to mature. It takes a long time for it to get sizable. And I think we're just starting to see us turn the corner. And with these increased water years, you know, this was a second really good water year in a row. I look for better recruitment, and I look for a stronger fishery.
Okay, great. Kevin in Plainfield, Illinois says, do you worry about bears much? And I know you're worried about the grizzly that's in your backyard tonight, but...
visits today.
Yeah. But he says, I fished the Lamar area on my own, and I was looking over my shoulder as much as I was fishing, especially this big wood pile that kept creating an image of a big bear living in it. So he said, you know, is there a problem? Is that something you should be, you know, worried about or paying attention to?
You have to have bear spray with you at all times. And not only fishing the Lamar and the Yellowstone and Slough Creek, as well as the Madison right here in our front yard. You know, we've got grizzlies here. They've increased their range. And I know where Kevin's talking about. There's a big wood pile out from the Yellowstone Institute, the Buffalo Research Center, on the Lamar, and there is a grizzly bear that lives in that wood pile and has for the last 3 years.
So he's not wrong about that.
Yeah. He's a good bear. He's not been a problem, but believe me, you have to be concerned with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's funny. Well, Kevin, keep your eyes out and take along your bear spray.
You bet. And learn how to use it, Kevin.
Is there any difference between official, quote, bear spray and mace?
Yes. You want to use the bear pepper spray.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, there's a couple that are recognized by the park, UDAP being the most effective, and I'm not here to plug any. I wish I had stock in the company.
Yeah.
And buy the big container. Don't buy a little one. Buy a big container and hose and use the whole thing. If a bear charges you, you spray it at their feet so they run into it. It has a 30-foot range, and you will take that bear and change his mind about you. But if you just spray him briefly, it just merely ticks him off. So hose him until he leaves.
Okay. And what was the brand of that again?
UDAP.
UDAP?
Yes, it's distributed out of Bozeman, and it is the best.
Okay. Okay, good. Important things to know. We already answered Bill's question there. Okay, we have some timing issues here and seasonal things that we'll talk about. Some of these we'll kind of lump together, but Frank is coming out in 2 weeks from Nevada City, California. And he wants to know where you suggest the best area for the best fishing opportunity right now is on the Yellowstone.
On the Yellowstone, I would head to the water outside of the park. Again, most of the fish, you know, in that lake area have migrated back into Yellowstone Lake for the winter. Okay. I would consider maybe a hike into the Black Canyon, which, of course, is below the Grand Canyon, just above the town of Gardner. But I think I'd really concentrate either going on a float trip. I mean, there's some great shops over in the Gardner area. Parks Fly Shop is one of my favorites, and they got good people and good advice. But I would float for one day, maybe McConnell to Yankee Jim Canyon, McConnell to Joe Brown, or go down into the Livingston area and float Mallard Rest to the town of Livingston. Big streamers, big hoppers, depending on the weather. If it's a very inclement day and snow is always the best, try a great big streamer pattern, a big woolhead sculpin or one of those. If it's bright and sunny, try a great big hopper or what we call a pink Miss Trixie. It imitates a huge kind of a light pink hopper, about a size 8, as well as big crickets, and you'll catch some good fish. On those inclement days, really look for betas to begin emerging around noon, and every fish in the river will come up. Now, we talked about this earlier. You have to separate the rise forms, you have to separate the classic head and tail of a feeding brown trout, cutthroat, or rainbow from a splashy rise of the mountain whitefish. So if you want to target trout, make sure you're fishing to trout and present a very pinpoint accurate cast. When trout are taking betas, little 20 and 22 blooming olives in the fall, they concentrate their feeding in very narrow feeding lanes. You have to be within an inch either side of that fish or he will not take your fly. And then you'll be taken by a whitefish. So make sure you get it right on the nose of that feeding trout.
Okay, good tips, good tips. Well, we've got several questions that all deal with coming out to Yellowstone in September of next year. Everything that you just said, does that apply to September? Do you have different conditions in September that they would need to know about?
You know, to me, the later you come in September, the better the fishing. And early October is even better than September. The weather may change. The weather may become brutal latter part of September and October. We're not seeing that this year. But generally speaking, we'll have some nasty weather, and that's what you're here for. That's what really triggers the aggressiveness of those big fall-run brown trout. And I like to fish big streamers at that time of the year during, you know, rainy, snowy days, or early in the morning, late in the afternoon on a bright, sunny day. I'll fish streamers in the morning, and then I'll go to a hopper or a big beetle or an ant, a cricket, one of those patterns. Be prepared for that. If during the heat or during the middle part of the day on a rainy, snowy day, you're going to see, again, those little blueing olives come off in enormous numbers. And the fish, every fish in the river will feed on them, even the big fish that are running to spawn. So be prepared to fish small flies on light tippets, and you'll be greatly rewarded.
Now, are you talking about the whole river, all the sections, or are we talking about Gardner?
Yeah, we're talking primarily Gardner down to Livingston.
So still, as soon as we hit kind of September, we're talking about the fish on the move into the lakes and in the upper section, right?
Yeah, most of those fish are going to migrate back into Yellowstone Lake. However, that middle stretch, that Black Canyon stretch, and this year was one of those years where we had some very, very beautiful Indian summer weather, highs in the 60s and low 70s, and the hopper fishing was superb in the Black Canyon. So you can take, again, the Hell Roaring Creek Trail or the Yellowstone River Trail and make a good hike out of it. You know, you're going to be hiking from 4 to 6 to 8 miles if you'd like. You'll see a lot of wildlife. Be prepared with your bear spray, but bring some big hoppers and crickets along, and you'll catch a lot of really wonderful fish in the late season.
Okay, then we have Peter from New York City. Do we let people from New York City come into the park? Is that allowed?
You bet we do. They're great folks. I'm both a Yankee and a Mets fan.
You're playing it safe, aren't you?
I have to.
He says, if I were to plan a trip to the Yellowstone River, what would be the best time of year to do? We just talked about the fall, but do you have a favorite time of year?
There's two times. Either pre-runoff, and that would be in April. Weather can be dicey, but you're going to beat the runoff, and you're going to have some very good dry fly fishing, as well as late. And if I would come late, and I was specifically there to fish the Yellowstone late in the season, I'd come in October. And I'd want to fish in and around the town of Livingston.
Okay, okay. Terrific, terrific. So we've kind of covered, I think, all the seasonal things as far as the park. Because I know the park, we've got some issues about what is actually open to fish.
That's right.
What are those restrictions?
Okay, the Yellowstone River below Yellowstone Falls opens with the general season in Yellowstone Park, which is the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend. And, of course, that date varies with whatever day Memorial Day is. This year it opened the 29th of May. Generally, the river is unfishable at that time because some of the streams are in runoff. So I don't recommend that you come until July. The water above the falls is not open until July 15th. And that is to protect those Yellowstone cutthroats as well as above. So, you know, you really have to pay close attention to those regulations. And we have literally hundreds of people, international as well as people from the U.S., that come every year to fish the Yellowstone Park way before season opens. So I can't speak strongly enough. Make sure you, before you plan your vacation to fish, make sure you check either with a fly shop or with the Yellowstone National Park by going to their website.
Okay, and when does the park historically close for the season?
Well, the park season closes, it's always open through the first Sunday of November.
Okay.
And this year, I want to say it's open through the 7th. It's as open as late as it can be. This year, the 7th of November is a Sunday. It is open through the 7th of November.
Okay. Okay. We have Fred from Dexter, Michigan, and basically he's asking, what's the best resource for one to get to locate all the different fisheries, streams, lakes, creeks, ponds, everything in Yellowstone Basin?
Well, and I don't want to, I'm not here to huckster and to push our book, but one of the most valuable resources, I think, is still our book, The Yellowstone Fly Fishing Guide, as well as the DVD that we did, Fishing Yellowstone's Hatches, which is a tremendous resource. And we bring you basically through all the rivers, lakes, and streams, and several of the creeks in the area, the hatches, when to come and fish them, and how to fish them. And the Internet, of course, is a tremendous tool right now, and there's so many good websites. But I really stress to Fred that he get a hold of fly shops, and we all have current up-to-the-minute information. We all have guides that have fished these areas for years and years, and we can offer some very, very good advice on when to come, where to stay, where to fish, campsites, and the whole nine yards. Use those resources that are available to you.
And one final general question here we have. Martin Coleman in Lawrence, Kansas asks, do you have suggestions about bringing one's family with them to Yellowstone to balance fly fishing and sightseeing? And do you have some comments about that?
Oh, you bet. Number one, if you wanted to do a ranch setup, there's plenty of dude ranches or just family ranches where the family can horseback ride and sightsee. If you're on a kind of a do-it-your-own, do-it-yourself, winging a prayer budget, if you will, come on out. And again, just go to the Forest Service, go to the fly shops. We'll map you out some incredible, not only places to sightsee, but places to fish. A lot of times we see families come out and drop the fly fishermen off at, for instance, the Yellowstone River or the Firehole River, and we'll map out a couple of day hikes they can do on their own, geyser basins to see. There's so many things like that available, and people aren't aware of that. And it's really neat to see a guy come out, and he's out here on his first trip, comes out the next time, says, you know, I'd like to bring my family. Finally brings his family, and here comes the spouse and the kids, and they have a ball exploring all there is to see, whether it be the thermal features in Yellowstone, to some of the hikes and the wildlife. We've got so much, this area has so much to offer, so many hiking trails, and it's all open to the public.
Okay, great, great. Yeah, I know, it's a wonderful place to be.
And you can't do it all in a lifetime. You can't fish it all in a lifetime.
No, no. And, yeah, take as much time as you can spare when you go out there, that's for sure. Well, we've got to take another break, but when we come back, we'll dig more, and we'll talk about some equipment, flies, and so forth, and talk about the different sections of the river. So hang tight, folks. We'll be right back. Have you ever dreamed about the classic actions of bamboo fly rods? Did you know that it's possible for you to make your own bamboo fly rods? With the help of Power Fibers Online Magazine, you can do just that. Power Fibers is a magazine dedicated to making bamboo fly rods and telling the stories about bamboo through the ages. From rod-making techniques to stories about fishing bamboo rods to rod-maker profiles to classic tapers, Power Fibers has it all. Visit their website at www.powerfibers.com. That's www.powerfibers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Craig Matthews about fly fishing the Yellowstone River. If you'd like to ask Craig a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Let me take a look and see what we've got coming in here, Craig, on the Internet, and some of these we'll hold off on and talk to as we come to those kind of sections. Oh, Craig, this is from John in Pontiac, Illinois. Any guesses about when the runoff will start for 2011? My son and I are planning a trip right after Easter, April 24th. Any thoughts about fishable water at that time of year?
Okay, now, bear in mind, all of Yellowstone Park waters remain closed and will be closed until, I want to say it's the 27th of May this coming year.
Okay, so you're faced with Gardner, right?
I'm sorry?
You're faced with fishing Gardner and below, basically.
Yeah, you're faced with fishing the Yellowstone below Gardner, which will be good, but you have so many other rivers, whether it be the Gallatin, the Madison, the Beaverhead, the Ruby, the Stillwater, the Boulder. There's plenty of choices that will be pre-runoff. You'll have good dry fly fishing. You'll have Amelitis mayflies. You'll have March browns and betas. And you'll also have two different species of caddis and, for sure, midges as well as the squalla stonefly. So you're going to have a lot of good dry fly fishing and some very good early season midge fishing.
Okay. 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 All right, a couple there we got. Now let's talk about equipment. We had Dave in, and we have to give thanks to this gentleman who's writing from Camp Leatherneck in Afghanistan. So, number one, Dave, thanks for your service to our country. We surely all appreciate that.
I echo that, Dave. Be safe there.
And he wants to know, Yellowstone is a big river. What's the best weight rod for fishing a river this size? And Peter from New York City again asks about, you know, lines, weight of rods, and so forth, too. So maybe you can address what would be the best setup that a person could bring to fish the Yellowstone.
You bet. I think a 9-foot, certainly a 9-foot for a 6-weight is probably ideal. Some of the newer rods on the market, you know, can really throw a heavy-weighted fly, whether it be a nymph or a streamer, and they can also have soft enough tips to protect small tippets, fine tippets, should you have to fish midges or number 22 blueing olives. So I really like a 9'6", although a 9'5" will work if that's what you have. I don't like intermediate lines or sinking lines. They just get tangled around your feet and around boulders. I'd rather use a floating line with a little bit longer leader, 9'4", I start out with for dry flies, and then I'll add tippet to that. And if they're, say, if they're taking midges or betas, I'll put a good pole of 5X. So I'm fishing 12 to 14 feet leader with a long, fine tippet. If I'm fishing big nymphs and streamers, I'll cut that 9 foot 4X back to about 7 feet, and now I'm down to 2X. When they're taking streamers and big nymphs, they're not tippet shy at all, and you can get by with a shorter, heavier leader.
Okay, okay. And we've got lots of questions on flies here, and I kind of want to hold some of these for the when we talk about the sections, because I think you'll have different answers for those. But let's just, Martin in Lawrence, Kansas again asks, what were the main types of flies that you choose to fish on the Yellowstone and why?
Well, and that goes back to your thought, Roger, on sections. But for the most part, you're going to need a good selection of midges for 12 months out of the year, early and late season. And by early, I mean March and April and first part of May. You're going to need betas, as well as September and October, little blueing olive size 22s. You want some good nymphs. You want some big stonefly nymphs, black as well as goldens in size 4, 6s, and 8s. You're going to want some betas nymphs like a Micro Madison or one of Mercer's beadhead betas nymphs, both beadhead and unweighted. And I should mention here, too, I neglected to say this. If you need to use weight, you can either weight your fly or weight your leader. That's why I don't like to use weighted fly lines because, again, they just get tangled. Streamers, you definitely want some woolhead or some sculpin patterns, a big sculpin pattern like a Sculpzilla or a woolhead sculpin. I like them in white, gray, and olive. That will fit the bill. The Yellowstone is a sculpin river. It's loaded with big sculpins, size 2, 4, and 6. So, you know, if you have stoneflies, midges, and betas, and then depending on the section, whether you want smaller stoneflies like little isoperla, little Yellowstones, as well as several of the different species of mayflies, and we have a lot of different mayflies and a lot of different caddis. You're going to always want some iris caddis in 15s and 17s, tied in that 102Y Tiemco hook in tan and olive, and a wide variety of mayflies, pale morning duns, pink ladies, the Epioris. You're going to want some mahogany duns, again, back to betas. You want several different species of mayflies, parachutes and sparkle duns, CDC patterns.
Okay. Lots of flies.
Lots of flies.
Chuck in Santa Rosa, California says, have you developed any flies with Yellowstone particularly in mind? And what is the process you and your colleagues employ in developing those signature flies for which Blue Ribbon is famous for?
Oh, boy, we have developed some flies with the Yellowstone particularly in mind, one of which was the improved sunken stone in the golden version. The Yellowstone is famous for golden stones, not only the giant, but the golden, more so for the golden, because they can be around in July and August. So we fish them for nearly 60 days a year. Some of our improved sparkle duns with a wing backing of Zeelon, as well as that Zeelon shuck, because the Yellowstone is such a bumpy river, and you'll find a lot of March brown. So with that, we put a Zeelon, added Zeelon in the back, with the wing backing of our March brown, so it would float better. Those are a couple of the patterns that I can think of for the Yellowstone in particular. Some of our stoneflies, some of our rubber leg stoneflies in different model leg versions we developed with the Yellowstone in mind, as well as the pink Trixie and the rooster. Both of those flies with a lot of pink and a lot of red in were developed specifically for the Yellowstone. And, you know, getting to his question, the process that we use, all of us at Blue Ribbon, and I'm so tickled to have our same fly tire, some of which have tied for us now for 30 years. A lot of it is trial and error, but most of it the result of a lot of time spent on the river. Our guides spend 100 to 140 days on the river. They watch fish's reaction to fly pattern. They're all fly tires themselves. And we spend, some of us spend a fair amount of time underwater, you know, watching how flies emerge. I first spent time underwater with my good friend who passed away, sadly, a few years ago, Gary LaFontaine, watching how caddis emerge. We watch how stoneflies crawl to the shore in preparation to crawl out and emerge. We watch how mayflies, and particularly those big emergences of pale morning duns and betas emerge, and how important stillborn patterns are. So a lot of it is trial and error with different materials until we finally come up with a pattern that seems to fool those really persnickety, those really selective fish that we really so enjoy fishing to. So we spend a lot of time developing our signature flies.
Terrific, terrific. Dave in New York asks, he says, there are so many fly patterns that are designed specifically for the Yellowstone area. I don't think he's just talking about, you know, your shop or anything, but in general. And he says, do the fish really need new patterns every season, or are we just supporting the fly tires who are locked in with their vices during the long snowy months?
Dave, probably all of the above. You know, it's like I don't need a new truck all the time, but by golly, I go out and buy one every now and then.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you can get by with probably a dozen very specific patterns that can get you through the season. But if you're like I am, and we all want the latest, greatest, by golly, I'm always looking for just that right fly that fills a little niche or just that little tying kink that seems to really turn the fish onto a fly. And fly tires are great people. Every one of them is a kick, and they all have their own little eccentricities, and they all have their little kinks that they've developed over the years and their little patterns. So a lot of it, yeah, they're locked into their vices during the long, snowy winter months, but believe me, they're not just tying to flies just to sell that pattern. They're tying flies because they want it to work because they know you're going to buy more and more of them. So a lot of it's heart and soul and a lot of time on the water.
Okay, and then we have our questions about if you only had, and one of them was two flies, and the other one was the one fly. So if you had one fly to fish the Yellowstone, what would be that one fly that you would take, you know, that you could use any time during the year, is what Bruce asks from Glendale, Arizona.
Ooh, that is a tough question with one fly. It's going to probably be a streamer because sculpins are always available in the river, and the bigger fish are always looking for a sculpin to take on the Yellowstone.
There you go, Bruce. Now you know. And that probably means some pretty good-sized fish on that sculpin, too.
Boy, there's some big fish, some big, huge browns and rainbows. And, of course, there's some great cutthroat coming on strong in the Yellowstone. So you want a big, big streamer, a size 2, sometimes even as large as a 1-aught. And you want it with a little bit of color, Bruce. Tie them big. Tie them with rabbit so they sink. They're not a lot of bulky deer here to float them. You want them to sink, and you want to fish them with either a long, steady retrieve or no retrieve at all. Fish it like upstream dead drift stonefly nymph.
Okay, let's just kind of run through. It's been the last section of our show here on the different sections. And before we do that, I just need to take a quick break, and then we won't be interrupted until the end of the show. So stick with us, folks. We'll be right back. Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska is owned and operated by well-known female guide Pudge Kleinkopf. Women's Fly Fishing offers several lodge-based fly fishing schools for women, as well as an array of small group guided trips for women and couples to some of Alaska's best-known waters for salmon, rainbow trout, Arctic grayling, and char. Pudge also leads saltwater fly fishing groups to Mexico each spring. Beginners are welcome and equipment is provided. Learn more about fly fishing for women at www.womensflyfishing.net. That's womensflyfishing.net. Or call Pudge at 907-274-7113. That's 907-274-7113. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Craig Matthews about fly fishing the Yellowstone River. If you'd like to ask Craig a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, let's talk, Craig, about the upper section of the river in and around the lake. You've already kind of described it, and you've told us about the size and the type of fish that we would be catching there. Martin and Coleman in Lawrence, Kansas asks, and I put this in this section, but he says, what makes the Yellowstone such a great river for fishing? Is it bottom composite, insect varieties, fish species? And are there any tricks to getting fish to take when they're not seeming to feed?
Well, you know, first and foremost, the upper section really is, and I think I mentioned this earlier, Martin, it's a virtual insect factory. The list of important stream insects is really about as long as the river itself. You've got three of the most important, of course, are the pale morning duns, green drakes, and gray drakes. But the other major mayfly emergences would include betas and Rithrogena, the big, huge olives, small western green drakes, the flavs, pink ladies, the little olive margaritas, tibialis, you know, mahogany duns, the late season olive, the heptagenia. You've got at least a half a dozen very important caddis, from the hydropsyche to the hesperophylax, which is the only place that I know of in the Yellowstone area, you'll find the Hesperophylax. It's a huge number 10 caddis that comes off when the river opens in July. And you've got, you know, both species of Brachycentrus and Rheacophila. You've got two different of the bigger species of salmon flies, the salmon fly itself, as well as the golden stone. There's, I don't know how many species of midges that come off all season long. The river's got tons of different species of scuds, different color scuds, and the banks, you know, literally crawl with grasshoppers and ants and crickets and bees and beetles all summer long. So, you know, you've got so much going on that river, and you have to be prepared for each emergence. But the trick there is, you know, you just key the time of the year you're going to be here and pick the emergences and the fly patterns, and away you go. You
right.
can really greatly narrow that down.
Now, is there something specific in the park, in the water, in the ground? Is it thermal activity that makes it such an insect factory?
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, the chemical makeup of the water and the fact that it's such cold water. And it's pretty much a constant temperature. You know, the Yellowstone Lake is about the last lake to freeze. First of all, it's such a deep lake, but it's a high lake, it's a cold lake, and that water remains cold and pure all year long. And it has tremendous weed growth. So you have all important species of mayflies present because of the high water quality and the cold water temperatures and just the right chemical makeup that support them.
Rick in Maryland, and I'm assuming his question is referring to this section of the river, but he says, why are some of the back channels on Yellowstone closed to fishing? They hold some of the best fish, yet we can't fish them. Is this the correct section to talk about this?
Yes. You know, a lot of those, most of those back channels, Rick, are closed because of the spawning activity that takes place in them. And, you know, science tells us that when you wade through a spawning nest, you know, after the fish done their spawn, and have left, and the fry have not emerged yet, you destroy literally 100% of that nest. So consequently, those back channels are closed to protect those valuable spawning areas, and that's why angling is not allowed in those spawning channels.
And once they're done spawning, I guess they tend to move back to the lake anyway, right?
They do. Actually, at that time, the water quite often lowers to the point where those spawning channels become dry the rest of the season.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I didn't know that. Bob in Ogden, Utah, he says, what about from the bank above the falls in the park? What is working best? The water was so high this summer it looked impossible to wade. I will be in the park this weekend, and I know we were talking about the Yellowstone, but he wants to know about the fire hole. You can talk about the fire hole if you'd like.
Yeah, the fire hole is going to be superb this weekend. We're going to have a little bit of a weather system come in, Bob, so you can plan on betas, midges, and a couple species of caddis, so the fire hole will be a whole lot better than the Yellowstone. I think the stretch he's talking about is along the bank, along Otter Creek, and just above the Chittenden Bridge, which is just above the falls. And it's very difficult water to fish because it's fairly slow and it's very deep. But there are some hot spots, particularly one right at Otter Creek and then right along the road above Otter Creek. And, of course, once you get to Alum Creek, which is just above Otter Creek, the water is closed to fishing for the next 8 miles as you go up towards the lake. That's that wildlife study area. So you really have to pay attention to the signs there, Bob. But when you fish that stretch, and it really is kind of impossible to wade, you're fishing right along the bank, and those fish will hold right along the bank, and you'll get very good green drake and gray drake emergences, as well as PMDs. So you want to walk that bank, keep a low profile, you know, don't stand out to the fish, and you'll see plenty of fish working, and when you do, there'll be pods of fish. There'll be 2, 3, 4, sometimes 6 fish working in a pod. And now the next group of fish may be 500 yards above them. So really take your time, stalk, find the fish, and fish to them with the appropriate pattern. You'll be greatly rewarded.
Can you do any floating up in those upper sections?
No. Totally closed to floating.
Okay. Any techniques in this section that you would say, you know, work best that might be specific to this section?
Well, again, you know, the best technique is to do exactly what the river tells you to do, and that's have patience, be very observant. Don't just jump in and start fishing the water. Once you locate a rising fish, determine what he's feeding on. Watch the rise forms. You know, if it's a caddis rise, kind of an aggressive, splashy rise, really watch the water. See if you notice any caddis along the banks. If you see a head and tail rise, such as would indicate a spinner, a mayfly spinner, really put your nose on the water, get a little seine out, and do what the river tells you to do. Tie in the appropriate pattern. Use very fine tippet and long leader. Those fish are shy. They're a lot like New Zealand fish. They're used to the security of depths because they're basically lake fish. So if you put them down, they're down for the count. Approach them from downstream. Don't let them see you. Use a hook cast or even an upstream dead drift. Put it above them far enough where you're not splatting them on the head and spooking them. And you'll be rewarded, but it's pinpoint accurate cast. Certainly don't rip the fly up. Once it drifts below them, let it drift a few feet below them before you pick up and recast. If it just basically flows just below them, don't pull it away from them too quickly. Cutthroat are noted for allowing the fly to go over them a foot or two, and then they'll race downstream. They'll turn and race down and take your fly. So let that fly drift below them 2 to 3 feet before you pull it off the water.
Yeah, that's a good tip. Okay, talking about any other comments you want to make about that upper section that people should know that we have
talked
about?
Well, you really have to be on top of your game. If you're used to catching, you know, 20 years ago you could catch 50 fish in a day. Now you catch 5 fish, sometimes 7 fish, but they're all going to be 20 inches up to 24 inches. They're big fish, but they become very selective, not like the past. So you have to do exactly what, again, the river, and I hate to be repetitive here, but you have to do what the river tells you to do. If they're fishing, if they're taking green drake emergers, you know, don't put on a salmon fly. Give them a green drake emerger. Be willing to change flies. Not every cutthroat will be on the same insect. If you'll really study the rise form and study what the fish is feeding on, you may see some fish are feeding on betus mayflies, other fish may be feeding on a midge, and sometimes they're feeding on flying ants. So be willing to change flies to each fish that's rising. Really spend a lot of time observing the fish. Get as close as you can. Don't send really long casts because you're going to get undetected drag. You have to have short line, pinpoint accurate casts to be able to defeat drag. And get on those fish and watch the reaction to your fly. If they don't fin up and inspect it, change it right away. Don't keep putting that same fly over them. Change flies. You may have to change flies 6 or 8 times before you get a take. But if you do, and if you're patient and you use the right presentation, you'll fool that fish.
Okay. Now let's move downriver. I guess we're going to move down below the falls, right? Middle section?
Yes.
How does the river itself change character in that section? Because we're talking about a broader, bigger river up at the top, right? Or is there...
You're talking about a very broad, slow piece of water. Once it hits the brink of the falls, it changes dramatically.
Okay.
And once it goes over the upper and lower falls, you have a tremendous roar of water through what's called the Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone. Access is extremely limited. Probably the only access point that I'd recommend is walking down to 7 Mile Hole. It's a tremendous fishery. It requires, so you're going to drop an elevation about 1,500 feet. The only access point is called Glacial Boulder. It's just below Inspiration Point. You take the trail and you walk down to 7 Mile Hole. It's an easy walk in because you're going downhill. Coming out, oh my gosh, bring some water with you. But you'll be rewarded. That's really the only access point for the next 14 miles.
Oh,
once
wow.
You get down towards Tower Falls, then it's a different sack of cats. You can walk down to Towers Fall and Devil's Den and the Narrows and Tower Bridge, and it tumbles along till you hit Knowles Falls, which is only a 15-foot falls, and that's in the Black Canyon. That's the lower stretch of the middle section. And that there's plenty of access points there, whether you hike in at Yancey's or Tower or Blacktail Deer Creek, and the Rescue Creek Trail or the Yellowstone River Trail. They're all very good access points, and it would take a whole program just to talk about those access points. But get a good map, stop and ask some questions. The character of the river, again, becomes rough and tumble. You don't do a lot of wading. It's not treacherous, but you don't do a lot of wading because it's fairly deep. A lot of places you'll only be limited to maybe 100 yards of fishable water, and then the canyon walls close in around you and you can't go any further. But fish the water very carefully. There will be literally hundreds of fish available to you, and you'll catch beautiful, beautiful Yellowstone cutthroats.
Now, are these deep holes, pocket water kinds of fishing?
Most of them are deep holes and pockets and big runs, long glides between pockets, big boulders. The noise of the river is pretty intimidating to some. It roars right along. Okay. But again, it's a wonderful experience. The fish are not selective at all. You can put on a big goofus bug, a humpy, a salmon fly. You can fish pretty much anything. Big attractor, and you will be, they'll at least come up and inspect it. You may have to change flies from time to time for the larger fish, but you'll be rewarded with catching some very nice fish.
So a lot of attractor patterns in there. What about streamers?
Streamers work real well. A big sculpin pattern, dead drift, or just twitched every now and then, works extremely well. Big stonefly nymphs work all the time.
And this is a question from the Internet. Rod in Amarillo, Texas, asked about, do you use articulated streamers?
Articulated streamers are really a favorite, have become a favorite with a lot of the guides, and they're even making inroads with some of the old-timers like myself. They work extremely well. They impart very good action. And that stinger hook a lot of times is the one that takes cutthroat. Cutthroat are funny. They take a fly, even a streamer, very subtly. Sometimes they just stop it. And you have to really softly set the hook. If you set it too hard, you'll pull it right out of their mouth. And I should mention, too, the classic rise of a cutthroat. A lot of people say, oh, my God, that fish missed my fly. He didn't miss it. It's just you hit him too quick. You have to let that fish come up, and they take so slowly. And once they come up, let them take and then let them start down with your fly. A lot of old-timers say, God save the queen, and then they'll set the hook. And they'll hook that fish and bring it in.
Huh.
Some people say it's best to have a bad hangover. You know, don't be too quick to set the hook or you'll pull the fly right out of their mouth.
Okay, and then let's finish up here on our last few minutes talking about the lower section. And this is a section you can float, right?
That's right.
In fact, we did have a question. Let's see here. Chris in Boise, Idaho wanted to know, what's the best venue for a do-it-yourselfer with a pontoon boat to fish in the Yellowstone? Are there places to tent camp on or an overnighter while doing a float?
Along the entire stretch from Gardner all the way to Livingston, there are plenty of access points as well as camping areas. You know, you can't go 10 miles without hitting an access point or a camping spot. They're wonderful places to take a pontoon boat. However, at certain times of the year, that river can eat you up. You know, you want to come once the water is lower, say mid-July, August, September, October, and stay out of the Yankee Jim Canyon. Do not go down below the Joe Brown access into Yankee Jim, or you're in trouble. That's not a place to bring a pontoon boat, let alone a drift boat.
Okay. All right. So we've got, again, don't we have a big wide river down there in that section?
Yeah, wide and fairly smooth flow. However, there are a lot of places, a lot of big riffles, a lot of places where the river makes a sudden turn and slams into the opposite bank, into the willows and some big sweepers. And those are areas that, you know, with a pontoon boat you really have to avoid. You don't want to get caught in one of those sweepers. But again, during the low water late in the season, you won't have a problem. But the water is fairly even flow. But again, there are places where there's riffles and canyon stretches, little canyon stretches. Certainly not anything like the rough and tumble nature of the upper river.
Okay. And Bob in Minnesota wants to know, is obviously you just said you could fish it by drift boat as well, but how difficult is it to row? Is it, if you stay out of that canyon, is it basically a pretty standard row?
This sounds like old Bob Hillstrom from Minnesota. You know, it's not all that technical. There are a couple places, though, down around Livingston, and there's one in particular where there's a canal. River left as you're going downstream, just above the Carter Bridge. And it's called the East Bridge Canal, and you want to stay out of that channel because there's a little wing dam on it. So if you hear a roar of water ahead of you, make sure you pull off and make sure that you're not going over the wing dams. Stay to the right side. And the technical part of it is, you know, you just have to stay out of those sweepers, and certainly anybody that's spent any time between the oars of a drift boat can do that. If you're floating into the town of Livingston, there's a couple bridges there that you have to watch for the abutments. But anybody that's experienced at all, I wouldn't call it technical. It's just you have to know how to fish from how to row a drift boat.
Okay, okay. Now, is this the type of river, does it fish, would you say it fishes like the Bighorn or something, where you're doing some fishing from the boat, then getting out and waiting and working an area back in the boat kind of thing, or are you doing mainly your fishing from the boat?
No, there are several sections that I strongly urge, as you go by, really make sure that you're very observant in terms of watching for rising fish, particularly if should you have betas or midges or some of the more prolific mayfly hatches. Make sure you watch those margins. A lot of times you drift right on through and then pull over and get back up and work the water. There are so many nice places to fish along that stretch of river that you want to avail yourself of that. You know, pull out from time to time. Don't bite off a 20-mile stretch to float all day unless that's all you want to do is fish from a boat. I like to do a shorter float and get out and fish several of those nice runs and glides and be looking for insects during, you know, predicted insects during that time of the year.
What do you think a reasonable float if you're getting out and wading and doing it just as you described?
I wouldn't want to do more than 12, 14 miles.
Okay.
During the course of the day, because again, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to go, oh my God, it's getting dark and I got to go 8 miles. Make sure you know where you're at on that river.
Yeah, that's what I found in most rivers. You know, anything more than 12 is really kind of, then it seems like you're rushing.
Exactly, yeah, and you don't want to rush those last few, particularly in failing light.
Yeah, and especially that might be the best fishing of the day is right at the end of the
day. That's right, so. Yep, and you're floating on by.
Yeah. Bob in Calgary, Alberta says he's going to float the Yellowstone next summer, and he wants to know if you can recommend put-in and take-outs for an all-day float trip for a first-timer.
For a first-timer. You know, for a first-timer, Bob, I think I'd do McConnell to Joe Brown, and that's just below the town of Gardner. Or I would do, if I was staying closer to Livingston, I'd do Maladresse to Carter Bridge. Those are two, or Maladresse to Pine Creek. Those two floats are very good floats. Pretty much anybody can make those floats. You're not going to get in any trouble, and you're going to have some very beautiful country you're floating through and some fine dry fly as well as nymph and streamer fishing.
Okay, and here's Julie. Julie in Athens, Georgia, said, about a week ago, I fished the Yellowstone quite a bit downriver from Gardner, but upriver of Livingston. We tried the Bow River Booger most of the day and with a small nymph dropper size 18. Couldn't get the big brown, but did get some small to medium bows. Lots of whitefish and then some cuts on size 18 purple haze dry fly. What could I have done differently to target the bigger fish? I love the cuts on the dry, not large, but bigger than smoking mountain trout.
Uh-huh. Well, Julie, I would have probably tried some very large dry flies. And it sounds to me like you might have been there during some nice weather. I would have tried some really huge hoppers, like a big grand hopper and an 8 or a 10. I would have also tried some streamers. You know, that small nymph dropper, size 18, I'll bet $5 you got a bunch of whitefish on them. I'm surprised you didn't do any good on a Bow River bugger. But again, you may have wanted to use a big one, a big wallhead like a number 2, and fish at dead drift. But I'll bet, and I know the weather has been so nice, it's been just too nice lately, and we're finally starting to have a change. But during those nice days when it's hot and sunny, and it's probably 80 degrees over there, you have to bring those fish either up to a big, huge hopper or a cricket, one of those patterns, or you have to be right on the bottom with a big woolhead sculpin.
Okay, great. Great tips. Well, good. Well, one final question here, and then we have to wrap it up. David in Leawood, Kansas asks, he says, hi Craig, big fan of your books and shop. If a dedicated fly fisherman is looking to move to Yellowstone area and have access to the park, Yellowstone River, and the best fishing, what town or area would you suggest? Interesting question.
Well, if work is not an issue, you know, if you have to have work, then you're going to probably have to move to, and it depends on, of course, the type of job. Bozeman, of course, is high-tech, and it's a college town, and there's some better jobs available. If that's not an issue and you just need some part-time work, certainly any of the gate communities, whether they be Cody, Gardner, Livingston, West Yellowstone, that's a good area, too, because you have ready access to the park. Now, with the Yellowstone River in mind, then you may want to consider Livingston or Gardner. Those are two towns that you can probably find some work, and you're going to be right there near Yellowstone Park as well as the Yellowstone River.
Great, great. Well, that's about it here, Craig. We do have some more things to take care of, but everybody stick with us. We're going to give away that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine, and also a copy of Craig's book, The Yellowstone Fly Fishing Guide, courtesy of Lions Press. So stick with us here for a few more minutes and see if you win one of our gifts. Casting for Recovery. Casting for Recovery provides fly fishing retreats for women who have had breast cancer, and at no cost to the participants. Well, Casting for Recovery is a contender for the Pepsi Refresh grant of $250,000, which would definitely help their funding. You'll see on our homepage, we put in a special section for them. And the way that you can help is just by voting for them. And you can vote daily for them on a couple of different ways, either texting from your phone, going to a website, going to Facebook. And we've put the instructions there on the website because it's kind of hard, too much to cover here, you know, by voice. So take a look at that. Go out and vote every day if you can, you know, as much as you can this month for them. I just checked their website before we came on the show, and they are right now in, believe, let's see here, their current rank right now is fourth in this contest, fourth. So if we can do our share, do some voting for them, we can get them hopefully closer to that number one spot, and they may win that $250,000, which would be a great boost to their funding. So help Casting for Recovery out. It's a great cause, and do your part by just voting. That's all you have to do. You don't even have to give any money or anything else. So I'd appreciate all of you taking part in that. Just a quick reminder to everyone before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find the link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on the link and leave your comments. Now, it's time to give away our prizes. So the winners of our drawings are randomly selected from our database. And if you are one of these winners, we'll send you the information on how to collect your prize. If you haven't registered yet, then it's really too late now. But register for the next show, and maybe you'll have a chance at the gifts we give away on the next show. There are always some great gifts we have to give away. So let me see who our first winner is here. And that would be, and this is for the one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, it'll be Dean Wormell in Massachusetts. Dean Wormell in Massachusetts. So congratulations, Dean. If you don't have a membership, you got one now. If you do, we'll get it extended for you, and I know you'll enjoy it. And if anybody wants to find out more about Federation of Fly Fishers, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org. Okay, now for a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine, which is also a great magazine and resource to learn more about fly fishing. And we have a winner there, Treg Owings. Treg Owings in Idaho. And congratulations, Treg. So we'll get you that subscription going. So we will send you an email, both Dean and Treg, and ask you for your information, and then we'll get these things, these memberships and subscriptions started for you. Okay, now to give away Craig's book, I'm going to ask a question, and the first person to answer it correctly, and on our website, it's just go to askaboutflyfishing.com on our homepage there in the text box, and you type in your answer, your name, and your location, and then we'll see. And Dean writes in, awesome, now I'm a member of the FFF, so that membership paid off for winning that tonight paid off for Dean. So good.
Hey, congratulations, Dean. That's a great organization.
Yeah, so good, and you'll enjoy that. Okay, so I've cleared my queue here, and the question is, when we talked earlier in the show and we asked Craig what were the 2 months that he thinks fly fishing is the best on the Yellowstone, he picked out two for us, and I want to know both those months. And we'll check here, Craig, see if anybody's got the right answer. And first answer is September and October. I don't think that was it, was it, Craig?
No.
Nope.
Close.
Which 50% was close, huh?
Close on the late end.
And sorry, it's not a hairy sculpin. See, some of these guys put in stuff in advance trying to, you know, guess what I might ask, right? Well, hairy sculpin was not it. But I think I might have found a winner here. How about April and October?
Yes.
And that would be John Order in Pontiac, Illinois. So, John, congratulations. You're going to love that book. You'll have to get out there and fish and use it and go out and visit Craig's shop, and they'll be glad to help you out with whatever you need, I know.
I hope to see you, John. Congratulations.
Yeah. Now, John, send us either in that same text box, send me your contact information, address, you know, city, state, zip, email address as well so that we can get that book shipped off to you. And Lions Press We'll be shipping that directly to you. Again, to learn more about Lion's Press, go to www.lionspress.com. Lionspress.com.